Chapter 1. Monday, 3:50 p.m. Outside the California Bank and Trust, situated directly across the road from the famous beach strip, a white Ford Transit painter's van with dark-tinted windows rolled up to the curb and parked. A logo with the words, "No job too big or small," appeared on its side. Inside the vehicle were four men dressed up in disposable head-to-toe white overalls. Young, inexperienced Joey watched on as his older brother Phil passed a 12-gauge shotgun to Victor, the eldest member of the crew, who had an ugly, rat-like face, rough and mean-looking. He then handed over a Glock 9mm pistol to Matt, the designated driver, whose hair was as white as snow. Waiting for the go-ahead, they prepared their weapons and made sure the ammunition clips were full.
5 minutes, said 35-year-old Phil Perugia.
He was raised to lead, and he ruled with an iron fist. Whatever he said, went. Maybe it was his instinct for cruelty that made the others respect him, or fear him. He walked like a boxer and possessed a stare that could send shivers down one's back. He glanced over at his fellow compadres as he cocked his double-barrel sawed-off shotgun and said,
"One last time, boys."
"Let's fucking do this,"
replied Victor, an eager participant. Under the wing of his brother was Joey Perugia, the youngest member of the gang. He was the complete opposite to his sibling, skinny, shy, with hardly any muscle definition. Blondish, long surfer hair tucked behind his ears, his eyes piercing blue and his skin fair. He was nothing like his family, whose tanned olive skin showed they were of Mediterranean descent. This would be his first bank robbery. His first ever criminal experience for his father. With arms folded tight across his chest, he tapped his foot with a nervous twitch and all the while stared out of the grimy window.
"Are you okay, bro?"
said Phil, sitting on the opposite side.
"Yeah," replied Joey, but his knees were still shaking.
Phil reached behind him and took out a gun, a German-built 10mm Glock automatic. He made sure it was loaded and gave it to Joey.
"That's yours. All you need to do is point and shoot if you have to."
Joey focused his attention on the gun. He weighed it in his hand, trying to find the balance between himself and his weapon.
"It's too late to bail out now," said Phil.
"Nah, I'm good."
"Remember, you wanted to be a part of this."
"Shut up, Phil, I'm good."
"Okay then, stop shaking and pass over the masks. Time is ticking."
Phil held out his hand and received the plastic bag that was located under Joey's chair. He tipped the contents on the floor over dried-up painter's trays. Once he saw the masks, Phil smiled.
"You couldn't help yourself, could you?"
"What? You said any."
Joey observed the three men put on their individual face masks. His face lit up with a grin, unable to contain himself. One of the jobs designated by his older brother was to obtain four masks, any masks, it didn't matter as long as they would cover their faces. They were the exact same disguises used in his favorite movie growing up, Point Break, a 90s hit where the bank robbers wore masks resembling American ex-presidents, Lyndon Johnson, Richard Nixon, Jimmy Carter, and Ronald Reagan.
"How do I look?" Phil asked, wearing the Ronald Reagan mask.
"Presidential," joked Matt as he looked back through his rearview mirror.
Joey placed his on last, revealing an old, big-nosed Richard Nixon. He raised his hands up in the air for all to see and said,
"I am not a crook."
Laughter erupted in the air-conditioned van that smelled of fresh paint. Victor, who sat to his side, slapped him over the head while Joey continued to smile beneath his mask. With his ex-president's mask on, white overalls, white gloves, and a Glock automatic in his lap, Joey felt like a reincarnated member of the Point Break clan. He was living a dream he would never forget, an experience that would inevitably change his role in the family forever.
"Blood in, blood out, bro," said Phil, holding out his knuckles.
Joey obliged by knocking fists.
"Blood in, blood out," he replied.
Phil had begun repeating this phrase lately. It didn't mean anything. It was just a warm gesture of brotherly love and respect.
"Do as we discussed earlier, and you'll be okay."
"I will," said Joey, happy to be a part of this adventure.
Phil, Joey, Victor, and Matt were all ready to go.
Timing was everything, but one thing still remained to be accomplished. 2 minutes later, a red Ducati Superbike 848 Evo with 140 horsepower engine sped past the van. It came to a stop at the intersection of Wilshire Boulevard and Ocean Avenue and parked on the footpath between some palm trees that appear all over the city. The man on the bike was none other than Alexander Perugia himself, the most dangerous man in America. He was the grandson to Vincenzo Perugia, most famous for stealing the original Mona Lisa back in 1911, described as the greatest art theft of the 20th century. Now, 100 years on, nothing had changed with his offspring ready to take on their own robbery. Theft was in their blood. Alexander Helmetless was in his early 60s. Although recently shaved, his face resembled a rasping board. He towered 6'3" and had a solid, well-built physique and was without a doubt a man you would not want to get into a fight with. He stepped off his bike, stretched his neck, and glanced over at the van in position. He took off his black Oakley sunglasses, showing his brown eyes, and placed them in his inner jacket pocket, from which he extracted a cigarette pack. He then bumped out a cigarette and lit up as if in slow motion. He was the mastermind. Today needed to go without a hitch. Too many things were at stake. After a few puffs, he flicked it in the direction of the bank and smiled. It was a wary smile, a sarcastic smile to be exact. You could tell he was about to orchestrate something big. He whispered a sentence to himself theatrically. "Soon I will possess all your treasures." In the confined space of the van waiting, Phil and Joey laughed at their father as he flicked the cigarette toward the bank. "What a show-off," said Joey, seeing his father in action for the first time. He had always envisioned what it would be like to be part of the gang, and now he was living it. "He sure is something," said Phil. Turning now to face the beach, Alexander sauntered slowly across the pedestrian crossing on Ocean Avenue, leaving the keys in the bike's ignition. "Keys are in place," Phil whispered. Dressed in his bike gear, Alexander pushed back the sleeve to his black leather jacket to uncover a shiny gold Rolex, a watch given to him by his sons on his 60th birthday. He glanced up in the direction of the Santa Monica Pier in all its glory, then back down to the ticking hand. The time was 3:59 p.m., 57 seconds. 58. 59. A large, billowing explosion erupted from the Santa Monica Pier. The detonation was the equivalent of an earthquake measuring 5 on the Richter scale. Fire and smoke consumed the Ferris wheel, or what was left of it. Fragments from the blast traveled long distances, some lodging in the famous Bubba Gump Shrimp Company restaurant named after the iconic movie Forrest Gump. Screams could be heard all the way from Wilshire Boulevard as windows broke and shattered from the shockwave. People stopped what they were doing and ran in the direction of the beach to see the blaze. Dozens of tourists on the pier were instantly killed as a large section of it was annihilated. Around the pillars of the pier, still intact, people hung on for dear life while fire debris rained over their heads. Dead bodies floated on the beach, pushed in by the waves. It was chaos. The explosion created panic with people running everywhere. It was the perfect distraction.